Well, welcome to the Leadership Lounge. It's great to have you join us this month to learn a new topic where we explore together with two of my guests. And I'd like to introduce to you, we have Joanne Moss from who is the director of Moss HR. She joins us today. And we have Steve Jackman, the program director for central government. And he's also got 30 years experience working in the private sector with organizations like Britvic and Diageo, Tesco's and Konica Minolta. So welcome to you both. So Joe, let's start with you. You're director of Moss HR. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what that entails.
I am. Hi, Colin. Hi, Steve. I'm founder of Moss HR, and we offer an outsourced HR department for small to medium-sized businesses across East Anglia. We believe that working in collaboration will get the best results, and we consult with our clients to understand their organisation, their strengths, their obstacles to get the success they want. There's never a one-size-fits-all when it comes to managing people. We work with private sector companies, charities, not-for-profit and in education. And more recently, I've been working with clients who are taking on their very first employee and getting the building blocks in place to facilitate their growth. And Colin and I met via the Stowmarket Chamber of Commerce.
That's right, we did. And it's been great to hear, Joe, actually, the work you do to just help small organisations as they establish it right from the beginning to get it right for working with people. And in case people didn't know, we actually also are now neighbours, aren't we? So we have offices that are literally across the courtyard from each other. So it's great to have that connection too. So thank you, Joe, for joining us. Thank you for giving up some of your time today, helping us explore our topic, which we'll introduce in a moment. But first of all, let me find a little bit more about Steve. Now, I know Steve very well. I've known Steve, for many, many years, haven't we, Steve? And we're very good friends. And so just tell us a little bit more about, and I know some of the work that you've done over the years, but tell our listeners kind of what your work involves now and some of the experience that you have.
Well, I've spent the last 2.5 years working in the public sector and running various kind of transformation programs for central government. But that's a real change from the 30 years I've spent in private sector, running commercial teams in the likes of Diageo and Britvic and Konica Minolta, managing processes, managing teams and delivering results for our stakeholders. So it's been really interesting transformation for me moving into public sector and taking those same principles that you've learned in the private sector and then applying them into a different setting. So it's been fascinating for me.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for joining us today, Steve, as we explore our topic. And as I introduce the topic now, people will see why I've got Joe and Steve with us today, because you both bring an experience on our topic of handling conflict. It's perhaps one of the most popular kind of courses and elements of coaching that I run with people, is how we handle conflict. And it's a topic that comes up time and time again, because being a leader where you create culture and when you're taking people on a journey of improvement has in its very nature conflict situations. And sometimes conflict can feel uncomfortable for many, as it involves people and feelings. But yet, conflict is really important too. We can often give conflict a bad name. Patrick Lencioni, in his brilliant book, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, outlines that healthy conflict is actually a really important part of working in a team. So how do we ensure our conflict is healthy? How do we manage the emotions in ourselves during conflict? And are there simple steps to ensuring conflict is managed well? What are the key components? Is there any difference when raising something where you might cause conflict and responding in a conflict situation? And my guests, Steve and Joe, have experience of managing conflict well, all from different perspectives. And in fact, we heard earlier, Joe's work is actually to ensure that we reduce the chance of that negative conflict, getting some quality things in place to help reduce it. So thank you for joining us. We've got loads to learn from you. So let's just start off with a simple question of just tell us a little bit about kind of yourself, where you've maybe come across conflict at work. Now, bearing in mind, of course, this is going to go out to lots of people over the internet. Clearly, we're not going to mention, oh, well, when I dealt with Brenda, oh, my word. But tell us a bit about, Steve, let's start with you. Where have you come across conflict at kind of work?
When I first saw the subject, I suddenly thought, crumbs, I'm the parent of three teenagers. or they're now older than that, but I suddenly thought that's where I've learned most about managing conflict, I think. But actually the dynamic in a work environment is really quite different, because you've got people, you either have your boss or you're the boss, and you have people in your team or you have peers. So, you know, making sure that you can have suitable relationships with people is absolutely key. And there's nothing worse than being at odds with someone, because it just makes whatever you're trying to achieve really, really difficult. And I think, you know, if I think back over the last couple of years, I'm a contractor. I go in and work with teams within central government. My role is to help them achieve an end. And that's why they brought me in to do that. Now, quite often you've got some people who have been there and they've said, look, we did this, we tried this 10 years ago and it didn't work. So why are we trying it again now? You've got other people going, I just need this delivered really quickly. So it's managing the tension between the parties that you're working with to try and resolve any underlying issues. And the first thing I would do at the start of a new program is gather around me the people who have vested interests and just listen to their perspective. So I really have a clear foundation of where we start from.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Steve. Thank you for sharing that. So, Joe, what about you? How have you perhaps come across conflict? I know at the moment, obviously, with your organisation, I don't think you're in too much conflict in your organisation, but have you got experience of it in the past? And what is it you then do then in terms of your current role to help with that?
Yeah, so obviously, yeah, you're right. There's not much conflict in my organisation, but as an HR consultant, I deal with conflict a lot. And that can come in the form of a formal grievance, or quite often someone's taken time off sick, maybe for mental health reasons, and then an issue comes to light that has led to their absence. And some of the things that I've dealt with can be as simple as a disagreement over whose job it is to refill the coffee in the reception area. And, you know, it becomes a really, really big issue as the time goes on, to a tricky situation involving an employee's wife having an affair with one of the work colleagues. And then they're both at work and really they need to try and work together. So that's obviously a very different situation. Mm. But in terms of my own work, yeah, the conflict is limited, which is brilliant.
Yeah, good. Particularly when you're helping others to work those kind of issues out. So for both of you, a real range. Some of it is the practical things about moving people on in a project or a journey. For some, actually, it's where things go wrong, or for some, it's where things aren't clear. And we'll explore some of those about how we reduce some of those negative conflicts as part of the process. So I think one of the things is when we get conflict in a conversation and things get a little bit tricky. And I just wonder, what is it about conflict perhaps that we don't actually enjoy? I mean, I talk to a lot of people and they say, oh, yeah, I don't like conflict. And in fact, therefore, they avoid it. And I've come across situations where people have avoided having a difficult conversation because it's a little bit tricky. And the result of that, it then goes exponential later on because it's just been left to fester. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes something really horrendous because someone hasn't dealt with it. So I think the first thing for us as people and as leaders is exploring, what is it about conflict then that we don't enjoy, and therefore we hold back, and therefore sometimes probably make mistakes from it. So, Steve, what about you? What is it you think that it is about conflict that we don't enjoy and therefore try and avoid?
I think the first thing is uncertainty. So, you know, we like routine. We like to know where we're going, what we're doing. And so all of a sudden, if you're thrown into a situation where you've been challenged or there's uncertainty, then that feels really awkward and uncomfortable. Mm. And I think the second thing I would cite would be, we don't like to be proved wrong, you know, because I would think things up and I'll present something and kind of go, it's absolutely perfect, isn't it? And I'll present it and someone will then go, ah, and they would give an opposite opinion. Mm. And I kind of go, well, why didn't I think of that? So either I feel slightly awkward, I feel slightly embarrassed that I didn't think about it, or I feel a bit of umbrage that someone has maybe challenged me in a meeting or in a one-to-one conversation. So I think they're kind of natural emotions that just kind of bubble to the surface.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Joe, what about you? What's your view on conflicts and perhaps the things and why we try and avoid it?
I think naturally people don't like confrontation, or they don't like upsetting people, or they just don't want to be seen as, you know, the troublemaker. So they avoid addressing those issues. And sometimes people don't know how to express the way they feel. So they just, as you say, they just bury their heads into the sand, and then it becomes a really big issue. And I see that with managers all the time. There's some conflict or some issue that they're aware of in their team, but because they don't know how to deal with it, they just ignore it, and it festers and becomes a really big issue. And then eventually there's an explosion of emotions because somebody has kept it in for so long.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a sense, isn't there, that it's A, understanding ourselves, confidence in ourselves, and knowing what is it I think here and how have I worked it through. Then there's the self-esteem bit that actually I might not be perfect. There might be something someone can bring to this. And then there's this, how do I communicate a difficult message in a way with some emotional intelligence and emotionally intelligent language? And if people don't feel they've got that, then they hold back from it. And then you've got all that mixture of, yeah, will I be seen as the troublemaker, or will I be seen as the argumentative one? And I was brought up to be a good boy or girl, and therefore I shouldn't upset people. So there's a whole range that mixes in there, isn't it? And it's perhaps recognizing for ourselves, what is it that's coming to play? Yeah.
Or it may be, Colin, that, you know, I haven't fully grasped the concept that's been shared, and I feel embarrassed about having to ask again.
Mm.
And therefore you kind of go, do I want to, you know, challenge the leader of that particular session to repeat it? You know, maybe they didn't discuss it terribly clearly or whatever. But I think there are various reasons why people tend to step back and not want to get into those kind of confrontation situations.
Yeah. So we will, as part of our session today, just explore how we manage some of those things, like manage our emotions, how we ask questions to get clarity and understand things. So, I think we will dig deeper in those. I'm also interested, though, just to think about this positive element around conflict. So as we said earlier, Patrick Lencioni in his 5 Dysfunctions of a Team outlines that the ability to talk about some of the tricky things is really important, because if we don't talk about them up front, they then end up becoming something that's talked about at the photocopier, in the corridor, at the water cooler, in the loos, in the car park. And then we create these little clusters of people. Oh, yeah. And people end up talking to the people who can't actually do anything about it. So he outlines it's really important we have conflict and talk about the difficult issues and work it through together. So what's our kind of experience of that? And is he right? I mean, I've said he's written this brilliant book, so we could say, well, he must be then. But what's your experience of that? Is it important to have conflict?
I think in any team, you need to have a range of skills and talents. It's a bit like a football team or a hockey team. And if you just have goalkeepers or you just have strikers, then in essence, you know, if you've got all strikers, then no one's going to know how to defend. And if you've got all defenders, then no one's going to put the ball in the back of the opposition's net. So I think it's about understanding your team. And you want people to feel able to speak their mind. And that's often where conflict comes from. It may be spoken in the wrong way or at the wrong time. But, you know, I've led teams, getting to know the team and helping them feel comfortable enough to share is actually really important. You then have to handle what they say, and that's a different skill, which we may touch on a little bit later on. But I think it's really recognizing the team you have around you, and really encouraging them to be open with you, so that you can actually alleviate any possible, as far as you can, any possible conflict.
Yeah, and I think there's some really important things here. It's important to have healthy conflict, and if we manage healthy conflict well, we reduce the chance of unhealthy conflict. Mm. And the first part of what you've talked about there is understanding your team, knowing where they're coming from, knowing what their drivers are, knowing their approaches. And so when you know that, you begin to understand, they're bringing this because they're passionate about this area. It's not because they've got the kind of annoyance with me. It's just they're passionate about this. So know your team and how to do that. I think there's an element where you were talking there where about our ability to model actually what is good conflict and for us as leaders to manage those sessions well. And so sometimes actually bringing the issues out We can model what we expect. We can talk to the team about this is the way we behave in our meetings when we're discussing these issues. This is how we recognize one another's views. This is how we start our sentences as well, so we don't shoot in. This is the kind of language we use when we're having this discussion. So we don't say to people, I think that's a stupid idea, that we perhaps start with, I really like this aspect of your idea, but I'd like to add this to it, so that we model that appreciation, isn't it, as part of that process. And when I think we establish that enables that kind of healthy conflict to bring it out onto the table and reduces the chance of negative. Joe, what about you? Anything around that and how we manage that healthy conflict?
Yeah, I agree. I think conflict can be really constructive, and it can help to challenge those longer term views, can help to generate new ideas and increase awareness of different values and develop alternative ways to solve problems. And like Steve was saying, with developing the team, it's developing that team to work together as well, to understand each other's views, and create a really respectful environment. Staff are an organisation's best asset, so it's essential to communicate with them effectively, because ultimately those key areas of the business can fail if you're not communicating effectively. And I think conflict can help to highlight areas that really do need improvement, or even areas for managers for development themselves, so that they can deal with conflict in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is this sense, isn't it, of just helping people to know how to manage through it as well, isn't it, in that process. And I mean, you've just talked there, helping managers to identify, is this something I need to work on, and that's where anyone listening to this, contact Joe or contact myself, and we can help you in different avenues in managing that particular process. But working out as a leader, how am I good at this? What is it I need to work on in how I manage that? And I'm just listening to both of you, really mindful of the fact that, Joe, you just talked about bringing the best for the organisation. There is a sense as a leader that we'll have a certain perspective, and we've got this vision or this direction we want to take someone, or this idea, this development, and we'll have this view of it. But actually that bringing people's opinion onto the table helps us to get a full 360 degree view of the issue. And if we want the best for an organisation, getting people's opinion and view means we'll get a fuller picture, but it also means we get buy-in. So that's why that conflict's really important as part of that process. Mm. So I'm intrigued though as well, where's the borderline between good and bad conflict, healthy and unhealthy conflict? Where do we think it, we've said we want info coming out onto the table, we want people's opinion. So we'll probably bag that as good. But where does it start to move then into unhealthy conflict? Have any of you got experience of, and we've probably all had experience of unhealthy conflict, but where would we say is the borderline? Where's the marker point as leaders that we should be going, ooh, hang on, we're straying into the negative territory there? Any thoughts?
I think from an HR perspective, it's when it affects somebody's behaviour at work, their conduct at work, their work performance, or their attendance as well. There's sometimes if someone's attendance has suddenly dropped off, or their timekeeping has suddenly become bad, that there's a reason for it. And I think that's when that healthy conflict can turn into bad conflict.
Mm. Yeah, so there's a thing around the first part you said, people's behaviours as well. So the kind of knock-on effect you're seeing is when somebody actually then starts to not attend because they're feeling unhappy at work. Yes. About the discussion situations. But it's also picking up on those behaviours you see that could cause difficulty, because you recognise actually those sort of behaviours are going to make people feel uncomfortable and then not want to attend. Yeah. Steve, what about yourself? Any experience on that one?
I think it makes me smile, because I think we've all sat in meetings where you can sense that conflict is emerging. It may not be very very obvious right at the beginning, but side conversations start happening when someone else is leading. You get that sort of body language where people are sat there with their arms folded or tutting or whatever, and you can just begin to see it. And so I think, if you're in that situation, you're trying to lead that team, then you need to make that decision as to whether do I carry on, or do I stop, take a time out, have a coffee break, just something to diffuse the situation that you see emerging. And if you get the opportunity, maybe have a quiet conversation if you have the time with that person. But I think you can start to see the trigger signs as you start to get into that sort of situation.
Yeah, so there's a real sense here, isn't it, that we need to be really clear on the behaviours we expect. So there'll be some proactive stuff we do as leaders where we explain this is the behaviour we expect when we're discussing things. And that isn't just a one-off, oh, you know, in 1974 we explained and we put it in a booklet. You know, it's we keep repeating, don't we, this is how we manage ourselves. Yeah. But then you're also talking about that reactive part and that dexterity as a leader to be able to sense the temperature in the room, to spot some of those signals and to respond to them. It's very easy as a leader to think, oh, do I broach this? But you've given a really good example there, just called taking a break for time out, allow it to calm. And as you say, maybe that in some cases it's that one-to-one then chat at the coffee queue, go, are you okay, because I've just spotted this behavior in you. And you do that in a non, you know, low confrontation, not in public kind of way. But there's equally those moments, aren't there, where sometimes you've got to bring the discontent in a corner of a room, you've got to bring it into the room. And it's judging, when do I bring it into the room, out right in the middle? When do I take the time out? And maybe sometimes it's the combination of the two, isn't it? Taking the time out, having a one-to-one and say, okay, how can you bring that discontent you have in a healthy way into the meeting when we get back after coffee?
And it may be that you have someone in the meeting who's been completely silent. And either they're never normally silent, and therefore they have effectively withdrawn from the discussion. And then as the leader, you have the opportunity to kind of go, what do you think? You know, there'll always be people who want to speak loads and think later. There are those people who like to do a lot of thinking before and then speak. They often come up with gems and real jewels. So it's often kind of going, if you're in a difficult situation and you can't get unity within the team, is call in some of the introverts and kind of go, we'd really appreciate your view. What do you think? Yeah. You know, and that shuts up some of the other people that give you their view all the time.
Yeah. And I think you've recognized a really important thing when we have, you know, conflict in conversations, is recognizing you have your extroverts. And for, you know, just for clarity, an extrovert isn't just someone who talks a lot. It's the person who kind of processes by talking, is it? And then your introverts, as we know here, is not just the quiet person. It's the one who thinks introvertedly inside themselves, needs time to process in quiet before they then bring it in. And Steve, it's brilliant for you to just bring that into this part of the conversation, just around recognizing as well, people will handle that thinking process in different ways. And as you say, your introverts might be a bit of an antidote to some of the situations as well, because they'll have reasoned and have thought it through as part of that process.
Yeah,
really, really good, really healthy. Okay, so there's a sense then as leaders, we have to have in these conflict conversations to keep it healthy, we have to have that dexterity of spotting the temperature of the room, responding to things, working out when the timeout can be good, when the bringing the discontent into the center of the room is important, that reminder during sessions as well around how we manage it and manage our conversations to keep the conflict healthy and not unhealthy. But sometimes as leaders, we also have to raise the issue of conflict, don't we? We're the ones that are going to bring an issue that we know there's going to be some difference of opinion on. And so what are our top tips if we know I sometimes use the phrase, I walked into a bear pit. Sometimes we accidentally walk into a bear pit and the bear goes rah, and we think, I didn't see that coming. And sometimes we know we're about to walk into the bear pit or walk into the lion's den, and we know that people are not going to find this issue easy. So what do we have as top tips for people just thinking about raising issues of conflict that we know it's going to be difficult, but so that we can keep it healthy? Any ideas there?
I think it's important to create that right environment, and as Steve said, you know, not maybe, you know, not saying in the middle of a meeting, you know, or bringing an issue up in the middle of a meeting, but choosing the right environment, the right time, and raising an issue with an individual when they're not already stressed or under pressure, because their reaction is not going to be good. But arrange a time when you know you won't be disturbed and the other party isn't facing a deadline or, you know, about to leave work. And manager's classic is, I'll do that a 4:45 when they're about to leave office. It's never a good time to do it, really, is it? And if it's about work performance, for example, ask the person how they think things are going. And quite often the person knows there's an issue and sometimes could be quite relieved that it's been highlighted. So it gives them an opportunity to discuss it. I think, you know, to listen to them and work out a plan with the person, showing them that you want you want to reach a mutually beneficial outcome rather than just giving them a telling off, I think helps.
Yeah, I think there's some real gold dust there, Joe, which I would expect from someone running an HR company on this topic. But that whole principle of really thinking about the emotional intelligence of what you're coming into here, thinking about your environment, thinking about the timing is absolutely crucial. And yes, at 4:45, when people are tired at the end of the day anyway, and about to clock off, is not the time perhaps to raise either a one-on-one or a group meeting on something. It's thinking really carefully and sensing, you know, if you were due to raise something and you just think, hang on, I've just got the temperature of this room, is this is not the time. This is just going to either explode because there's so much, you know, gas in the room already. This is going to explode on me. Just to go, although I wanted to raise it today, I need to think about my timing here. And also that last key point you mentioned around doing things with people. And so you say, asking people, oh, how do you think it's going? Now, of course, sometimes people can go, yeah, it's fine. No problems at all. But at least you've got an idea then that, okay, they are oblivious to this. And so you have to going into that, it's planning that thing as well, isn't it? Thinking, I'll ask them how they're going because I want to work with them on it. And almost preparing yourself for the three different answers as well, isn't it? When they come back to that.
Yes. Yeah. You know how to tackle the issue then, yeah. Whether that's, well, actually, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's going great, or, well, okay, it's great that you think it's going well. Have you considered this, this, and this?
Yeah.
And again, putting that question back to them.
Yeah, yeah. And just planning that beforehand, isn't it? Okay, so if they respond with a sense of, I think everything's fine, what is going well? So I'm able to say, actually, well, I think this, this, and this is going really well for you, but I want to talk to you about this area that I think we need to improve. So you've got almost a decision tree, isn't it? If they come back and say, it's fine, this is how I'd respond. But again, it's just involving them in the process, again, I think is really useful as part of, I think often where conflict really comes is when people feel that they've lost a bit of control on something. You know, when someone's coming in and telling them, you're not good enough at this area, they feel, I'm on the back foot and I don't feel in control of this. Whereas if you involve people in shaping something, that has real power, doesn't it? Because they haven't lost their control.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Steve, what about yourself? Anything from you on this area?
Kind of building on what Joe has said is, I would say certainly allow plenty of time, because there's nothing worse than raising an issue with someone and then going, by the way, I've got to go to my next meeting now, but let's talk about it next week. That's just disastrous.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing would be, and I've kind of learned this the hard way, is be prepared for a different outcome. Because my kind of approach as I first started to manage teams was, I was the leader and therefore I had to have everything covered, no loose ends, anything like that. So therefore I would think everything through, I would present everything. And the team felt disempowered because ultimately I just presented everything. And so I kind of learned from my mistakes and kind of transitioned into a kind of part-baked approach of presenting change, where I kind of go, this is ultimately where I think we need to finish up. I don't understand what the journey is in between. Can you help? And therefore you give people empowerment so that you kind of reduce the opportunity for conflict or for unhealthy conflict, because people feel involved. So when you have that conversation with them and you know, you're challenging something, then ultimately it may be that actually the outcome I have thought may not necessarily be the best one.
Yeah.
But it's through that dialogue that they may actually go, oh, but I didn't tell you about this other thing I've been doing, and that's why I haven't been able to complete that task or something. So it's, I guess you learn that from experience, but not having, as a leader, not having to have everything signed, sealed, and delivered to enable, you know, the team to be a success.
Yeah. So, there's two key E's that I'm picking up from both of you. There's this sense of empowerment and this sense of engagement. Actually, whether you're doing a one-on-one with someone about improving performance, whether it's looking at managing change with a group of people, what you're looking to do is bringing their engagement into it and empower them as part of the process. And so, as you've said there, Steve, have some core, maybe a core end goal of where you feel, you know, this is the broad brushstroke of what it should look like, but actually some of the painting detail I want you to help bring to this, and engagement of them in the process means they're contributing. And then it's not a conflict of my idea against your idea. It's an engagement in that.
Yeah.
When you're, as Joe, as you were saying, if you're going to have a one-to-one with someone about something that needs to improve, yeah, asking them what's their view on this, again, then engages them in the process. And it's not being done to them. It's being done with them and alongside them. So yeah, some great top tips there for people. One of the things that I've discovered actually in working with people, and like you, Steve, I've learned over the years, fortunately, my hair loss isn't just because I've got it wrong too many times. I think there is something hereditary in that, but we do. That's the thing about leaders, where we learn from that experience, isn't it? And one of the things that I've learned is the power of giving your why and your purpose behind something. So you know, Simon Sinek's famous for his book and his podcast around people engaging in the principle of why. We don't engage in a what, but we engage in a why. And I've learned also that when, you know, we mentioned this earlier, understanding the people or the person that you're working with, what drives them? What's their why? What's their, you know, what's the thing they hold passionate about? And if you can help them see their why in the context of the why and the purpose of what you're trying to bring about, and like the good old Venn diagram, get that intersection across the two, then again, that comes back to that's where we can get some of that engagement. So have either of you got any experience of that, or is it just me, or do you want to say, no, Colin, I think you're wrong on that, or is there any kind of experience that you have around bringing clarity around the purpose of the issue that you're raising with them, but also tying that into their purpose?
One of the things I found working in the public sector, particularly as I've coming in and running programs on other people's behalves, is they don't struggle to give me feedback. So quite often, you know, if they're not that necessarily bought into the program, they will tell you exactly, because they don't have to work with me for any length of time. I'm not their line manager. I'm not their peer. And I think of one example where one program I was running, one part of the establishment that I was working with, they had implemented something 3 years earlier, which actually had been working reasonably well. The remit I then had was, can you take that and broaden that out across many departments? And so first port of call was to go and talk to this gentleman, and he was very accommodating and gave me access to his team and what they'd done. But he made it very clear to me that actually whatever I came up with, he wasn't buying into, because he'd already done it 3 years earlier. And therefore, I was no way could I come up with anything that was going to be better. And that would almost be tarnishing his reputation. And so this caused me a real dilemma, because this guy, huge force for good, huge force for negativity. Mm. And so therefore, somehow I needed to bring him close. And I need to get him on board, whether he bought into what I wanted ideally, but I needed him internally to be an advocate for what we were doing. And so someone suggested to me, why don't you invite him to join your steering board? And I'm going, don't be so stupid. That would be suicide. But actually, when I thought about it, I needed to demonstrate some respect for him, some trust in his views, because he'd been in the organization for many, many years. And so actually we did it. And I invited him, and there were times at the steering group where I was kind of going, why did we ever do this? Because he was pointing at all of the negatives and whatever. But actually, there were times when he just said, we did this 3 years ago, and this is absolutely what we need to do. So against my gut feel of bringing him close, it actually really benefited the project, because I was tackling the conflict that otherwise would have just bubbled around. And it was a rich lesson for me to learn. My gut was going, don't. But actually, having done it, then it was a really good thing to do.
Yeah, and actually, in your story and your example there, although that was perhaps at times difficult, what it did enable you to do, where he was raising objections and challenge, a bit like when you put some iron in a furnace to turn it into steel, that kind of testing the temperature and burning off some of the difficulties and asking the difficult questions in that context saved it perhaps going wrong in other contexts because of his experience and seeing. But yeah, there is a challenge though, isn't there, when people are saying, I'm not going to buy into it. We need to get them to buy into it. And by you getting him in close and involving him in it and helping him see how he could contribute in that particular case made the difference. Mm. Joe, what about you? Any experience around people understanding the purpose behind things and the why? Any measure in it?
So I really like the iceberg theory. So what you can see on the surface, the behaviour and what people are doing, but you can't see what's below the surface. So people's beliefs and their past experiences. So having done the job, you know, 3 years previous. And I think it really helps to understand what drives a person to them behaving in a certain way. And I think that theory really helps people when they can see it in an actual image. And it helps them to stop and think deeper into perhaps why someone's behaving the way they are. So an example, again, from an HR perspective, many years ago, I managed an employee and she worked as part of a customer services team. And all of a sudden, she started to come into work late. No explanation for it at all. Just five, 6 minutes, you know, every day. But it was causing friction in the team. And no one really wanted to kind of address it with her because they didn't want to be that bad person. So I sat down with her and said, you know, I've noticed that your timekeeping isn't as good as it was before. You know, what's going on? And it turned out that she'd separated from her husband. She'd moved out. She was having to take the children further to school. And so by the time she got into work, it was a bit later. And so we worked out a plan together so she could have some extra time in the morning and then make up the time later. And once her colleagues were aware of her new working pattern, it was fine. But again, it's just kind of understanding the background and the purpose as to why she was coming in late and working through that rather than just ignoring it.
Yeah. So there is a sense with both in terms of practicalities when there's an element of conflict, it is that spending time with people and understanding. Mm-hmm. Both of your examples, they have that, don't they? What is it I can get to know about this person? Where can I find these points of connection? Where is there some kind of synchronicity between either the direction of change we're taking or the purpose of the organization and our reason for why attendance is important in your example, Joe, and where is then some overlap with them and their situation and where is it they're coming from? And then when we understand that, so it comes back to the Stephen Covey stuff, isn't it? Listen, understand, then you can be understood. Really key part. Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah.
So one of the things that can be a real challenge in conflict is managing emotions. And it can be managing our own emotions when perhaps somebody, you know, we've inadvertently walked into the bear pit and the bear goes rawr at us and we suddenly feel, whoa, they've come at me with ferocity. But it's also about how we manage situations and reduce the chance for emotions boiling over from other people as well. And we can only manage our own emotions. We can't technically stop other people's, but there are things that we can do to facilitate emotional management within interactions. And Steve Peters has written a brilliant book, if people haven't read it who are listening, a brilliant book called Chimp Paradox. It's got some really helpful thought around managing our emotions. And the basic principle is, for Steve Peters, he explains that our brain has different parts to it. We have our frontal lobe, which he calls our human part, which is the logical processing part. He's renamed the kind of back part of our brain as a computer. It's where our past experiences go. And then he's renamed our emotional center, our amygdala, in scientific terms. He's renamed that our chimp. And he talks about the fact that actually we process things. Does something feel like a threat? And the first thing we do is we check our past experience, our computer. Have I got any experience of this? And if we haven't, it passes it to our chimp, our emotional center, to say, well, you've got no experience of this, but does this feel threatening at this point? And if it feels threatening, then of course the chimp will react emotionally and it will react in different ways. We perhaps all know about the fight, flight or freeze response, that either someone will come out really fighting or someone will freeze and just go dead quiet, or they'll flee. They'll just go out the room in tears as part of that process. And that's all our chimp, our emotional reaction to the situation. And so he talks about in the book about having some key language that we can use as well, that we don't dismiss people's emotions. We recognize the emotion that they're going through as part of that process. If we can, we remind people of times when things have been okay. And that also we perhaps give time for our human, more logical part of our brain to catch up, because when we get emotional, we've released a hormone called cortisol. That means this frontal lobe is, our human part is a bit kind of slowed down in the thinking and we're reacting emotionally, and giving a bit of time allows that part to catch up. So I think that I've always found that really helpful, actually, when somebody is being emotional, to use language that helps calm it, like saying things like, I'm here to help you and I can see this has upset you, recognizing that distress rather than rejecting it. And if necessary, like you were talking about earlier, Steve, let's just take a break for 10 minutes, grab a coffee and let's come back again, allows that to catch up. But I wonder from your experience, how How have you kind of helped people manage emotions in conflict? What sort of things have you found to be helpful when people have got emotional? How have you kind of managed that?
I think the first thing that strikes me is we're terribly British. And someone can be I could be sitting in a meeting and someone could clearly be upset, but no one knows what to do. Mm. And so when you see that, you know, let's be human. Let's just call time and kind of go, look, let's just, you know, clearly something is up. You know, this is an unusual behavior for this person. So therefore, let's care for them. And I think asking them to verbalize how they're feeling in an appropriate way is just really helpful for you to understand, but also for them to understand. So that you can really understand. I love your example, Joe, of the iceberg. Brilliant. Because what you see on the surface is just a manifestation of something that may be going on underneath. Mm. And I think the other thing for me is I've really been struck by the fact that everyone who's in life has a certain amount of energy. Now, the challenge for us as leaders is to channel that in a positive way. But quite often we may encounter it in a negative way. But actually sometimes I really celebrate the people that are prepared to challenge negatively, that they may not get the strategy right or the tactic right, but fundamentally, if they've got the energy that they want to deploy, then I think I can work with them. And my challenge then is to convert that from negatively expressing itself into positively encouraging the project or the team. I'd much prefer someone who's a bit of a live wire rather than someone who's, you know, just a bit deadpan and not really engaging, because I really feel that if they've got the energy and they've got the desire to sort something out and tell you that it's wrong, oh, okay, well, tell me what's right then, and let's see if we can actually channel that energy. So I found that's worked well for me.
Yeah, so I love that, Steve. It's just about saying, okay, this person might not have expressed it in the right way. It might have been anger and tears or whatever, but it's unpicking what is it that sits underneath it that can be used and is helpful, recognizing that, isn't it? Recognizing actually what your rate, I know you're finding this difficult. I can see from your emotions, this is hard and the way you've expressed it, but what I'm picking out is this. And so you help them almost to decipher the issue. And then also, as you say, find out the energy that they can bring to it as well. Mm. That's really helpful. Joe, what about yourself? Any view on what works well in managing people's emotions in conflict?
Yeah. So quite often, in my role, it's people are upset or angry when I'm dealing with conflict. And taking someone who's angry for an example, the first thing I do is let them have their say, let them get whatever it is off their chest. Because allowing them to get it off their chest and offload usually then helps to have a constructive conversation afterwards. And agree that recognizing that they're angry and saying something like, I can see things that aren't right and you're angry and I want to understand what's going on so I can help, allows them to feel comfortable with sharing what's happening. And then you can agree between you, okay, you're upset, this has happened, how can we deal with this, how can we move forward?
Yeah, and it's that key thing again of recognizing their emotions. So you said let them speak and then recognize the emotion that's within that, but then also, as you've said, just then, okay, so how are we going to take this forward, is a really key part of that.
Because when somebody's angry, you're not taking in anything that anyone is saying. All you can think about is your own anger, isn't it? So you need to kind of get that off your chest first.
Yeah. And there is this sense, whilst they are in that position, they are operating in, as Steve Peters would call it, their chimp, as the scientists would call it, in their amygdala, in their emotional center. They're not operating in their frontal lobe, their human part, the logical working way forward. So we have to give them time to operate that out, don't we? And then time for that kind of more logical part to catch up. And sometimes once they've let it out, they're able to come through. For other people, it does need the cup of tea, or let's look at it again tomorrow, when they can operate in that section.
Yeah. And in employment law, if someone, you know, for example, you know, someone is got angry at work, there's been an argument and they've said, right, I'm leaving, and they walk out, there is actually a cooling off period. So even though they've said, I'm leaving, I'm not coming back, you should allow them that cooling off period to cool off and kind of reassess. So
Yeah.
Yeah. If someone ever does that, then don't just assume that they're not coming back. Great. Allow them that cooling off period.
So not only do we get top tips, but Joe has also thrown in a free bit of legal advice smoking, yeah, if you ever get that. And I think that's useful for people to know, isn't it? And,
yes,
and yeah, isn't that a good piece of law, though? Because people are operating in their emotional center. They're not thinking in the kind of logical part of their brain. So they do need that cooling off period. So yeah, thank you for that brilliant, not just top tip, but top legal tip as well, Joe. Thank you. Yeah, so that people aren't then busy preparing the P45 even, yes, before they've walked, yeah, out the door. Yeah, it's important that we give them that. So what about our own emotions though? Because, you know, we've talked about, yes, we can, you know, reassure the person, acknowledge their emotions, give them time to catch up. But we're human beings too, so there'll be emotions that we're going through when they're going rah at us. How have you found managing emotions in yourself in those kind of situations? Any top tips for our listeners?
I think I found myself in a situation where in one of the companies I work for, they had a large reorganization, and effectively I and my entire team effectively were being made redundant. And they were moving that facility out of this country into a different country. And that was really painful. So I got called in to see the chief exec. He then told me what the plan was. And not only was I losing my job, but my team, you know, who I built and I loved dearly, and we were doing a great job. But you know, this chief exec wasn't a believer in terms of the way we were doing it. And he wanted to do it in a different way and wanted to do it more cost effectively. So I guess in that situation, again, I had to be brave for the team whilst I also was thinking, what on earth am I going to do? And I think someone mentioned to me about try and manage the anxiety for the team. Let's not do it all for them, but it's almost have a steady hand on the tiller. So if they saw me losing my head, screaming around the office, going, I'll take you all to court, that probably wouldn't have helped. But if I also was full of platitudes saying, don't worry about it, it'll all be absolutely fine. Well, it won't, because we're all going to be out of jobs. So it was managing the team anxiety, holding your hand on the tiller so that you could navigate the team through, because they still were my team. I wanted to make sure that they found good jobs and that they weren't kind of forgotten about. So I found that really helpful, really helpful bit of advice from them.
Mm, great. Thank you, Steve. Joe, any thoughts from you on managing your own emotions in those challenging moments?
So I think maybe I've been in HR too long, but I've developed quite a thick skin over the years. And early on in my career, things did really affect me emotionally. But now I've kind of put that down to experience, and I've tried to separate, okay, this person is angry or whatever about the situation at work. They're not angry at me. And, you know, if I'm angry or anything, I try and just take a couple of deep breaths, calm down before I respond. It doesn't always work, but I try and deal with it that way. And I think you're right, Steve, when you're managing a team, you are, even though the same thing is happening to you, you are still heading up that team and they are still looking to you for that guidance.
Yeah. So I think in both these answers that it's about us being emotionally intelligent, isn't it? It's recognizing, what am I feeling, recognizing our own emotions. And like Joe, you've talked about, take a deep breath before I respond. It's that thinking time. I recognize this is affecting me emotionally. So just take some time. Sometimes it's a deep breath. Sometimes we actually need to go, let me just take a break and I'll come back to you, because we're recognizing the emotions within ourselves and that possibly our response at this stage might not be so strong. So it's about us leading ourselves in this situation, isn't it? I think in some of my experiences where I've been in very difficult situations and you can feel your emotions coming up, I always use the phrase myself, what story do I want to write here? It's just trying to remind yourself, yeah, what is it I want? What picture do I want to paint? And I suppose it picks up a bit of your one, Steve, just in terms of that example I want to give to others in it. And it is then just taking this moment to, okay, what story do I want to write? I know I'm feeling cross about this. So if I am cross, what do I need to do here to manage myself, lead myself better in this situation? Is it actually, I need 10 minutes? Is it I need a deep breath? Is it I need to ask a few more questions to really understand the situation? And I also like your one you mentioned there, Joe, just around recognizing that sometimes this isn't personal. It is just actually they're upset, and they're upset about a situation at work. And then we can think, oh, is it me that's upset them? And just recognizing this isn't personal sometimes, even though it might feel so.
Yes.
And giving yourself that talking to. So we've got just a few more questions before I give you top tips. And one of the things I just want us to explore before we draw to the end is just around how arguments can kind of just go too far sometimes. And so, again, some of the work that I do with people and just looking at arguments and where it goes wrong, people often use something called the straw man technique, where they take the weakest part of someone's argument and set light to it and make fun of it. So a bit like the principle there is that in the olden days, they had a straw man on the edge of the village where all the sins of the village were put upon and it was set light to. So all the worst bits were set light to. And often that happens in arguments. When people take exception, they'll then take the worst bit and make fun of it. And of course, all that happens then is that things go wrong and people end up getting personal. Well, I know I think your idea is rubbish and it doesn't help at all. And so I think there's a guy called Daniel Dennett who talked about the steel man technique, whereas actually we take the best bit of somebody's argument and build on it back to our own, where we recognize, oh, yeah, I can see why you think this. I used to think that too, but I've now found this, and we add something to it. Much harder for somebody to refute or disagree, because you're basing it on an important part of their argument and you're trying to find the point of connection rather than point of disconnection. So when we know we've got a difference of opinion, how do we get those issues out in the air without explosion or unhelpful scenes? What have you found again about, well, actually, yeah, we have got a real difference of opinion here. How have you brought things to perhaps a more positive conclusion? Any experience there?
Steve, earlier you mentioned having teenage children. So mine, well, I've got almost a teenager and a 10-year-old. And my daughter, who is almost 13, going on 26, is, you know, she'll swear that, you know, grey is black and the other way around. And sometimes I just have to take that deep breath and just say to her, oh, that's an interesting way of looking at it, even though I know the sky isn't pink, it's actually blue. That's an interesting way of looking at it. And just, I try and do that in work situations. Not that I say it maybe in quite a patronising way, but just try and remind myself, okay, that's just a different way of seeing things. It's a bit like the image where it's got a number 6 and this person sees it a 9 and that person sees it as a 6 because they're standing at different ends of the number. Yeah. So taking a deep breath and just trying to understand their point of view, I think.
Yeah, and I think that is such a key principle. It comes back to that Stephen Covey thing, listen to understand. And part of listening means sometimes asking a question and recognising, okay, I recognise this point of view you've put across, and then asking questions to understand their perspective. Like you say, oh, that's a really interesting view. Tell me how you've got to that. What's your thinking that's brought you to that? And so we're spending time really understanding their position, and then we can build upon it. So that core principle is really key. Steve, what about yourself? Any experience of how we bring things to kind of conclusion when there's such opposing views?
I really like the illustration of the steel man. I've not heard that before. And it really resonates with me because running in and or coming in and starting a program, I know very little about the subject matter. Mm. My role is to facilitate the team discussion. So ultimately, I have to take what people share with me, and therefore we build from the foundations. We talk about a jigsaw puzzle. So we're trying to put together, let's try and find the sides, let's try and find, you know, and ultimately lead to what the final image is. Yeah. And so from a steel man perspective, that's absolutely what we're doing. I have to set aside my own personal views on things and my views on individuals as to whether their contribution is as valued as someone else's. Because I'm not there to judge that. I'm there to, you know, deliver the ultimate program for the stakeholder. So, but I think it's a really helpful concept.
Yeah, yeah. And I've certainly found it's much harder for people to really get the cob on with you when you've started by saying, I really like this bit of your idea. I understand this bit. And I wonder if we added this bit to it and you bring it back to yours. It does reduce the chance of it. And again, I've seen time and time again, when the conflict really goes wrong is when they straw man, when they take their mickey or push yeah. back against something. And often what you find then is the straw manning starts with straw manning the idea and then ends up straw manning the person as well. And you see this happening politically, you see it happening in social media, and you see it happening in conversations. And all that does is escalate things. So the importance of starting from that point of connection, listening to understand things first and then building on it, reduces that chance of that negative conflict. So one more question before I ask you for your top tips. So what we always end on these podcasts, on the Leadership Lounge podcast, is like, what are your top tips for kind of handling and managing conflict and leading yourself and leading others in conflict? But one last question before you have your top tip. So it's giving you a little bit of thinking time on what that top tip could actually look like. But I just wonder how we work healthy conflict into our routine. So proactively, just going back to Lencioni's kind of premise that healthy conflict enables teams to work well, how do we introduce healthy conflict into the workplace in a way that reduces the explosion but airs the issues? So from your experience, how do we proactively kind of work that in almost into our day-to-day routines? Any thoughts?
I'd share a little of what I said previously about only part baking ideas and then bringing them to a table for discussion. My natural inclination would be to present the solution and everyone applauds at how fantastic it is. But that doesn't work because you don't get buy-in that way.
Yeah.
But actually kind of saying, well, let's throw a few ingredients on the table and kind of go, what do you think we might be able to do with these? You drive that engagement, you just get people interested, and then people feel valued because you're interested in their perspective.
Yeah.
And they're much more readily, you know, wanting to get involved, I think.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Great. So it's about saying, this is our clear end point that we need to get to. Here's some principles, but let's piece this together. So they become contributors rather than conflictors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, what about from your perspective?
Yeah, from a management perspective, I think managers need to know how to recognise conflict and to react in a positive way rather than just a positive and proactive way rather than just leaving it. So it's not always a natural ability. So some training is sometimes necessary to recognise those signs, such as, you know, decrease in team working or collaboration, negative comments, which you've just said about the colleagues, or pointing the finger and allocating blame. And on similar lines to what you just said, Steve, to create a culture with open communication, which allows people to air their views in a safe environment, perhaps a monthly team meeting or staff surveys, and really leading from the top to create that culture. And I think if employees can see they're supported in sharing their views and that they're dealt with in a constructive way, issues are more likely to be highlighted early on in a productive way, and they can be nipped in the bud.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's a really key point, Joe, about creating this culture of safety where it's okay to express our views, and you almost on a day-to-day basis work that in and kind of model, this is how we raise our issues as well, isn't it? And it just becomes a safe place. I could raise it and he or she didn't get really cross with me. And when we raise it in this way, then that works well. And so you begin to create that culture little bit by little bit, but it starts from creating that safety. That's great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Guys, it's been fantastic to work with you today in the Leadership Lounge, to spend some time together and hear all this rich wisdom and also included some free legal advice as well, thrown in by Joe at one point as well. So this has been really good. But unfortunately, our time has come to an end. Time flies when you're having fun in the Leadership Lounge. And so it's now time for the top tips from you guys as to, what is it for you? What is your top tip for kind of handling conflict as leaders and in the workplace? So, Steve, let's start with you.
I think mine would be about trying to build trust across your team, because without that, you will forever have people double guessing whether you've got their back or not. And I think of an example when I joined a new organization. I was the third leader in of this team. It was like a revolving door. I thought, wouldn't it be a great idea to have one-to-ones with all of the team? And one guy looked me in the eye and he said, you've got no experience in this industry. What are you doing here? And you kind of go, anyway, my name's Steve. Nice to meet you. And he was purely looking at it that I didn't have the technical understanding that the rest of the team had. And I said, I'm not here to add to your technical prowess. I'm here to lead the transformation in the team. And, you know, from that point, we had a very open conversation. And I think, you know, trust takes a long time to build, but it was because I wasn't trying to be someone that I wasn't, but I'd been brought in to transform the team, not to help them in their technical understanding. So building that trust with the people that you're working either in your team or alongside, or you're working with your boss, I think is really key to helping managing conflict.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Steve. Jay, what about you? What's your top tips for our listeners?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Steve just said. I think my one top tip would be try to see things from someone else's point of view and focus on a shared outcome rather than arguing the point.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's really great. I totally agree with that. It's that ability to just really listen to understand people's perspective, isn't it? And build trust as part of that that process. So some really great top tips for our listeners. So thank you, Steve. Thank you, Joe, for joining us on the Leadership Lounge. Thank you, listeners, for joining us too. We look forward to joining us again next month for another great topic on leadership and some more great guests. But first of all, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Joe, for joining us. And thank you, listeners, for being part of the Leadership Lounge.